I don't care if we take a couple of Sundays to get this done, okay? I know a lot of people have put some study in during this week. I'm going to just read a verse, make some comments on it. Then Sam's got the portable mic hooked up, and we'll just go around and let people tell us what they found in their study, okay? But real quickly, in Isaiah 28, verse 9. Isaiah 28, verse 9. Randy, would you pray for this service?
Oh, boy. Dearly, Father, just ask you to put your hand upon this service, and while we do, sure, we study. May there be little to no foolishness to come out of it. Name your son, Jesus Christ, I pray. Amen.
Amen. Good. He got so shook up, he closed his Bible again. All right. Isaiah 28, 9. Whom shall he teach knowledge? And whom shall he make to understand doctrine? Them that are weaned from the milk and drawn from the breast. For precept must be upon precept. Now listen. For those of you who really put study in this week, for that question that you had, okay, and I know some of you have talked to me about it, and you have, you may not have found all the answers you're looking for, but what you've done is begun to build a foundation of precepts, because certain things have to be known before God can teach other things, okay? And it's just like anything, you know, you can't teach a first grader calculus, all right? They've got to learn a lot of other things first, and then they can get that. So what you're doing is you're building a foundation in your life for studying that Bible, for knowing it yourself, knowing it, how to go into it, and it's such a rich life to live. So precept must be upon precept. Precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little and there a little. Now the sad part is, this caused Israel to stumble. For with stammering lips and another tongue will he speak to this people. Today, if the Jews hear from God, it's with a different tongue than Hebrew. Okay? And because again, when they hear Hebrew, there's a veil on their face, a veil over their heart, and all they hear is their tradition for what they think those things mean. Okay, so God has put it where stammering lips and another tongue, we speak to this people, okay? To whom he said, this is the rest, wherewith they should cause the weary to rest, and this is the refreshing, they would not, okay? And the thing is, it goes on and says that they fell backward. When Jesus Christ was there, he asked the question, he said, David, he quotes Psalm 110, in the Spirit calleth the Messiah Lord. All right, the Lord said unto my Lord. And then he asked the question, if the Messiah is David's son, why does he call him the Lord? And they stumbled, they fell. They couldn't get that. Why? Because they didn't want to get that. It's too obvious. And so with that in mind, who wants to go first here and tell us what they've learned? All right, Tim raised his hand first. Peter, you come on up here. And you want to do it from right there, or do you want to come up here?
I can go up there and do it.
All right, you come on up here. All right, everybody get the gaze at your good looks.
My question was, what was that snare in the Psalms that it talks about Christ being taken in? And that the devil wanted to catch his feet in, and that the fool gets taken in Proverbs. So at first, I'll just kind of follow along with what I did and give you the high points. First, I'm going to look at what was that snare and how it works. So I'm going to go to Psalm 142, verse 3. You can follow along if you will. 142, Psalm 142. I didn't have a verse for my first question. I don't know what you mean.
Where did you get the question from?
The Bible. I really don't remember where I got the question from. All right, Psalm 142, verse 3. I'll read the whole thing. I cried unto the Lord with my voice. With my voice unto the Lord did I make my supplication. I poured out my complaint before him. I showed before him my trouble. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then thou knewest my path and the way wherein I walked. Have they privily laid a snare for me? And that was my question. What is that snare that they have privily laid? If we go to Proverbs chapter 6, verse 2. It tells us how this happens or could happen. Thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. Thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. Proverbs 12, verse 13. The wicked is snared by the transgression of his lips, but the just shall come out of trouble. Proverbs 18, verse 7. A fool's mouth is his destruction, and his lips are the snare of his soul. Now let's look at Isaiah 24, 17 through 18. So we're kind of looking at what the snare is, how it gets him. We know it gets a fool in his words. Now this is God giving judgment to other people and also, I believe, prophecy of the cross. Verse 17 in Isaiah 24, fear and the pit and the snare are upon thee, O inhabitant of the earth. And later we'll see that it says, O inhabitant of Moab, in another passage. Verse 18, and it shall come to pass that he who fleeth from the noise of the fear shall fall into the pit. And here's the crux, and he that cometh up out of the midst of the pit shall be taken in the snare. For the windows from on high are open, and the foundations of the earth do shake. So he that cometh out of the midst of the pit shall be taken in the snare. Jeremiah 48, 43. Almost the exact same idea as we found in Isaiah 24, 17 and 18. Verse 43, fear and the pit and the snare shall be upon thee, O inhabitant of Moab, saith the Lord. He that fleeth from the fear, same words, almost the exact same, shall fall into the pit. And he that getteth up out of the pit shall be taken into the snare, for I will bring upon it, even upon Moab, the year of their visitation, saith the Lord. So that's really how the snare works. It'll take you, and it can take you by your mouth, but God will also take you in that snare. That's what it seems to be doing. So then what is that snare? Go to Isaiah 28, verse 9.
Yes, sir.
Pastor Hain also took some of my verses. Stole that from me. Okay, verse 9. Whom shall he teach knowledge, and whom shall he make to understand doctrine? Them that are weaned from the milk and drawn from the breasts. For precept must be upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little and there a little. For with the stammering lips and another tongue will he speak to this people. Verse 12, to whom he said, this is the rest wherewith ye may cause the weary to rest. So God intends this, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little and there a little. He intends this to be where he would give them rest. And you may cause the weary to rest. And this is the refreshing. And then here is the crux. Here's the other side of the snare. And I'll explain that. Yet they would not hear. Verse 13, the exact same almost as verse 10. But the word of the Lord was unto them, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little and there a little, that they may go and fall backward and be broken and snared and taken. So the one side of this is that it would give them rest and comfort, and on the other side, it would break them and make them to fall backward. And the crux of it is, if you listen, if you hear, it'll give you refreshing. If you do not hear, it'll make you to be broken. So let's look at how that works. Isaiah 8, verse 14. Isaiah 8, 14. And he shall be for a sanctuary, but, as Pastor Ain talked about, but for a stone of stumbling and for a rock of offense to both the houses of Israel, for a sign and a snare to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. and many among them shall stumble and fall and be broken and be snared and be taken. And so there's the question, why are some stumbling and falling and taken in that snare, as Christ was taken in the snare, but the others are comforted by that snare? So let's look at how you escape the snare. This is really an outline of it. I don't know if I fully understand what I'm reading. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 14. We know that the people that weren't taken in the snare listened because it said they would not hear, therefore precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little and there a little, was to them a stumbling block because they would not hear. So in verse 14, the law of the wise is a fountain of life to depart from the snares of death. So we know that the law of wise can take you out of the snare of death. Chapter 14, verse 27. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life to depart from the snares of death. And in Job 28:28, it says, unto man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. So the fear of the Lord, just like in the previous chapter where it said the law of the wise, the fear of the Lord is that law of the wise. So now Psalms 18, how did Christ escape that snare? We know he needs to hear. Psalm 18 is that great prophetic psalm where we see him, the sorrows of hell compassed me about. In another verse, in my distress, I called upon him, then the earth shook, and then in another, there went up smoke out of his nostrils. We see that whole thing as it goes. But then we get into verse 18, and I'll read a little bit of this. Verse 18, they prevented me in the day of my calamity, but the Lord was my stay. He brought me forth also into a large place. He delivered me because he delighted in me. So we're wondering, how did he get delivered from the snare? Well, the Lord delighted in him. And now the question is, why did the Lord delight in him? My guess is because he heard. And to hear is to do, so much so. The Lord rewarded me according to my righteousness, according to the cleanness of my hands hath he recompensed me. For I have kept the ways of the Lord, and have not wickedly departed from my God. For all his judgments were before me, and I did not put away his statutes from me. The law of the wise is a fountain of life. He didn't put away his statutes from him. I was also upright before him, and I kept myself from mine iniquity. Therefore hath the Lord recompensed me according to my righteousness, according to Jesus' own righteousness, because he heard and he had that law of the wise, God would recompense him according to the cleanness of my hands in his eyesight. With the merciful thou wilt show thyself merciful, and with the upright man thou wilt show thyself upright. With the pure thou wilt show thyself pure, and with the froward thou wilt show thyself froward. For thou wilt save the afflicted people, but will bring down high looks. So that was kind of where it made sense to me, is that if you're froward, that line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little and there a little, if you're froward, God will show himself froward, and that will be a stumbling block to you. But if you're not froward and you obey God, God will make that to be a comfort to you. That's all I got.
Hi, Timothy, real quick. Two snares. One, the snare of death. You had that well. Think of the other one as this. Since the fool snares himself in his mouth, how many times did they come up and try to get Jesus to snare himself?
Right.
Never worked. Good. An excellent study.
Miss Autumn, would you like to go next? All right, do you want to sit back there or do you want to come up here? Pardon? All right, very good. Let's take care of the mic. We'll let Randy sweat a while. Now, Autumn had a very fascinating question. She wanted to know this. When the armies of Israel were carrying that dead man and dropped him into Elisha's grave, and he popped up and came back alive, where had his soul been before that? So she's done some study on that. Let's see what you got, sweetheart.
Well, I first look into some of the different people that were brought back from life. So it was the guy that was in Elisha's tomb. There was Lazarus, Jairus' daughter, the man that fell asleep in the window. The young boy, the widow's son, Jesus, the widow of Nain's son, Dorcas, and then the resurrection in Matthew. And then there were 10 of those people, which I thought was interesting. And then I looked at all the verses, and there were differences, because some of them said that the spirit came, some said that the soul came, and some didn't say anything about spirit or soul. So I looked into it more, and I looked into a few of them. And it says, Jairus' daughter, her spirit came again, and he fell at Jesus' feet. And Tim McVeigh did that message about falling at Jesus' feet, so I looked more into the feet. And then there was another one when Elisha and his bones, and it said the man that touched Elisha's bones, and he stood at his feet. So I looked into those, and there were 3 of the 10 people talked about feet, either weeping at their feet or bowing down to the feet or something like that.
Okay.
So I thought that that was interesting, so we looked into it more, and we just looked at that for a little while. And I looked at, I think it was Nebuchadnezzar's dream where they had that idol, and I looked at what it had for the different sections, like what was the feet made of and everything.
Good.
So I looked at those, and the feet was made of, I think it was made of fine brass. And I looked into that too, and it said that the brass is used for armor or coins or instruments.
Yeah.
And they used that a lot back then, and I just thought that was interesting for connections. Mom says that you can look at one thing and then you can like go and rabbit trail off.
That's easy. Mom was right there, that's for sure.
But it talked a lot about the feet, so we looked into that more. And I think that where they might have gone was at God's feet.
Okay.
Brought them back. So that's my conclusion, I guess, is where I
think. I love it. Now there you see a young lady who's, and let me tell you something, what God has done for her. Oh, go ahead.
There's another thing. So I told Mom this joke and she thought it was hilarious. I said, so there's 10 people that they brought back to life and you have 10 toes on your feet, so.
Well, there you go. I love it. That's good. But what's happened with Autumn is now she has a wide foundation of things she has learned, okay? And as she goes on, she'll build on that. She'll find answers to things that you'll read over and not even realize that it's anything, but to her she'll go, oh, why? Because she studied there. And that's wonderful, Autumn. I really, really enjoyed that. That was good. All right, Mr. Kenyon, do you want to come up here? Sure, I love it. Come on. Take your paper.
You're mine later.
Please, for starters, I'm just going to be blunt, honest. When I started the study, I just flat out came in with the wrong mindset because there was one particular verse and one alone I went with the idea and just, I actually got to thank Mr. Thank for giving me a cheat sheet being right here in front of me. Thank you, by the way. Give me a second. Here we are. The verse that drove me nuts, that drove me to the study in the first place, said, the soul of the sluggard desireth and have nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made fat. It drove me nuts every time I go over that proverb. I'm looking at the term soul, and I keep thinking of fat as like, you know, the grizzled obese man. Probably not what he's thinking of, so what the heck does it mean? And Pastor was explaining to me earlier, you ever have those days where you're just feeling down in the dumps, you feel like nothing, and then you have those days where you got something to you. So that gave me a bit of foundation. But in the study, I found it over and over again before he explained to me, frustrating, just kept on going over the burnt offering, the burnt offering, the burnt offering, multiple different ways. The one of them that did stand out to me, and actually not going to look, I'm just going to have to paraphrase it because I don't remember it. It dealt with the idea just, I'm going to botch this heavy. If one were to take in some of that fat, he would be separate from his own. And again, I don't know the verse, bring me for that, because I'm not a diligent studier. This first time I've done it since high school, so going to need some slack cut. Of course, I do have to thank a few people. My ignorance, having conversation just about helped me more understanding. Like earlier last time, I think it was with Josh, we went over in the concept of the bones. He reminded me of the concept, what's in the bones? Marrow, life of the bones. and then had a conversation with Mr. Dan, Tim, other aspects, like, not only can you be fat and body, you can also be fat and wealth, and what was the other two things you guys said?
They told you you had a bad memory.
He doesn't remember that.
Love you people so much. However, I'd already made up my mind. I'll pretty much wrap it up with this. I figured I already gotten so little out of it. I already figured this isn't going to cut it, so I'm just going to continue to study on and get more from
good.
After that.
Amen. Amen.
Good.
Amen.
Good. I love that. Randy, you did a good job. Okay.
Right. You know, Daniel and Jen went to Moxville, North Carolina this week. Dan said to me last week, he said, well, we won't be in church next week. I said, why is that? Oh, we have stadium seats. Where? Moxville. So they're in church there. But he said to me, he said, but Dad, he said, I won't be able to hear people's answers. And I said, we'll record it. They'll be up here. You'll get to hear everything. Randy's thing was, you know, how is a soul made fat? Okay? How is a soul made fat? And the thing is, first of all, he looked and realized how much fat's involved with those offerings. And the reason for that, fat is a picture of the soul, okay? If you were to take an animal, and I texted this earlier to Miss Ashley, but if you've ever seen anybody take a coon, they got that, they want a coonskin cap, they make a couple of slits, and they'll take something, a vice grip or something, and rip that skin up off that coon. There sits there a perfectly shaped raccoon without its outer form, shimmering with that fat, okay? That's the soul, that's a picture of the soul, okay? So that's why that fat gets cut off and burned in the fire and Israel wasn't to eat the fat, okay? It's a picture of the soul. So then he asked me, well, how's the soul made fat? Now keep this in mind, Randy is a minority thinker. What do I mean by that? When God made him, he gave him a thought process different than the majority of people. The world has a term for that they call Asperger's, okay? They've labeled it, all right? But keep in mind, the richest man in the world thinks like Randy does, okay? It's not a handicap. Anybody who thinks it's a handicap doesn't understand Randy. They don't understand what a minority thinker is like. It's only a handicap when you're around more people who don't think your way. Now, if you had an island of people, 100,000 of them thought just like Randy does, you walked on that island, they'd have trouble with you, okay? So one of the things is, there's a girl on the internet I see from time to time, and she calls herself an Aspie. Asperger's, an Aspie. She, us Aspies. She said, you can't speak figuratively to us. All right, you just can't do it, you know? Figurative speech just drives them crazy, all right? And it drives Randy crazy. So that's why I told him, I said, Randy, don't you have days you get up and you feel kind of hollow and not much going on inside? And he said, yeah. Have other days where you feel, wow, you know, you feel like you're worth something or whatever. That's the soul being made fat, okay? That's what God wants to do. He wants to give value to it in your own mind and your own heart to give you that value, all right? So, again, Randy, very, very good job. Who else do we have here that's done some study and wants to... Anybody else? Okay, come on, Miss Joanna. We'll get you right up here.
Preach.
She will.
Bring the mic down.
Don't use your fingers.
Remember, one mistake, we're all going to be mad at you.
It says in 1 Chronicles 28:9, and thou, Solomon, my son, know thou the God of thy father, and serve him with a perfect heart and with a willing mind. For the Lord searcheth all hearts and understandeth all imaginations of the thoughts. If thou seek him, he will be found of thee. But if thou forsake him, he will cast thee off forever. And I was wondering, how do I serve God with a perfect heart? Because if he expects it of us, obviously it's attainable. And then let me find it. I think it's in Hebrews 2, in the last part of verse 10.
Thank you.
it says, to make the captain of our salvation perfect through suffering. And I thought, well, how are you made perfect through suffering? And I started doing a study on it, and it says in 2 Samuel 22:33, God is my strength and my power, and he maketh my way perfect. And then it says in verse 31, as for God, his ways are perfect. And I thought about if we were walking with God, and because it says in Proverbs that God, I think it says, God knoweth the way of the righteous. And I'm thinking about it, and I'm like, so if we're walking with God, does that, and if we're walking with him, does that mean that we're walking perfectly? Because if we're like, because I think perfect means coordinated, balanced, and also complete. That's just what I got out of it. And I started getting discouraged because I'm like, well, I'm getting more questions than I am answers. And then I thought about it, and I'm like, what, and it just, this came to my mind, what makes a good day? Not how many things I've accomplished, but if I look at my day and I say, how many things did I screw up? Well, a lot. But then I can take that and I can learn from it. And that's the same thing that I saw here, was just that I could take what I got and just learn from that. That's it.
Would you define perfect again?
Yeah. What I got out of it was coordinated, moderate, and complete. That's what it seems to be. And I did not look up all the references of perfect, because as Mr. Tam was telling me, if you have rabbit trails, chase them. And I chased a lot of rabbit trails. But that's what I got out of that.
Stop and think of that definition. Coordinated, moderate, and disciplined. That's probably one of the best definitions I've heard. And I've heard theologians work with that. Coordinated, moderate, and disciplined. Okay? That's a perfection there. Okay? It's the kind of thing you're looking for. Coordinated, moderate, and disciplined. That's very, very good. Who else has something? Anybody else? Okay. All right, somebody over here? All right. We're going to let the lady go first. Why don't you bring, do you want to come up here, or do you want the mic brought to you? Well, come on up here. Your husband got up. I think that said it.
Yeah. I cannot.
I'm going to adjust this for you. There you go.
Thank you. I can't make eye contact with any of you, or I know I'll cry. I might cry anyways, but I'll see how much of this I can get through. So my question was in Ephesians 6, verse 4, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And when I think of nurturing, I think of mothers. And so that sparked my interest, because this verse was specifically to fathers and fathers alone. And so then I wanted to do a word study on the word nurture, and what God expects of fathers according to nurturing their children. And I found that the word nurture is in the Bible only one time. And again, I found that fascinating, because only one time did God use that word, and it was specifically to fathers regarding raising their children. So with this assignment, I started by breaking the verse down, which I learned from Brother Maury years ago when he did a message on a verse, and it seemed to say the same thing two times, only in different wording. And I'll never forget Dale saying, God's not redundant. And that always stuck with me, because of course he's not. So now I look at the wording much more closely, thanks to that. So the first part of the verse tells fathers not to provoke their children to wrath. Provoke is to call into action by offensive words or by injury. By provoking, you cause a response. What response are fathers told not to cause? Wrath. Wrath is violent anger. Next in the verse comes a colon. The purpose of the colon is for lists, quotes, or to connect two sentences when the second sentence summarizes, sharpens, or explains the first, which is what we see here. After the colon, it's instruction on how to fulfill the first part of the verse. So fathers have been told what not to do, and now God is instructing on what to do. Bring them up. This means it's not a one-time discussion or something you pass off onto the Sunday school teacher to be responsible for. It needs to be continuous. Bring them up in, not with, the nurture and admonition of the Lord,
good.
But in the nurture and admonition of the Lord.
That's good.
In is enclosed or surrounded by, or period of time during which an event takes place or a situation remains the case. Children need to remain enclosed by, surrounded by, the nurture of the Lord for the duration of their upbringing, and it is the responsibility of the father that they remain there. In order to get a better understanding of what God means by nurture in this verse, I looked at other verses that give instruction for raising children, knowing that God is not going to contradict himself in his instructions. So I think we can find examples of nurturing behavior in Proverbs 22, verse 6, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. The nurturing behavior is train. To train is to teach and form by practice. Be consistent to not provoke your children to wrath. 1 Timothy 5:8. But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. The nurturing behavior here is provide. Provide to get, collect, or make ready for future use, to prepare. Provide for your family to not provoke your children to wrath. Deuteronomy 6, verses 6 and 7, and these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And diligently is to be consistently thorough. This nurturing behavior is teach. Teach to instruct, to inform, to communicate to another the knowledge of that which he was before ignorant. Teach your children to not provoke them to wrath. Hebrews 12, verse 6, for whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. And I wasn't going to include all of the numerous verses that speak of chastening or talking about beating and not sparing for the crying and those things, because I thought that they would fall more under the umbrella of the admonition of the Lord. But then I realized that that was foolish, because you chasten those that you love, and love is nurturing. So the nurturing behavior here is chasten. Chasten to correct by punishment for the purpose of reclaiming an offender. Chasten your children when needed to not provoke them to wrath. Genesis 18, verse 19, for I know him that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him. The nurturing behavior is command. Command to order, to direct, to charge, implying authority and power to control and to require obedience. Fathers, have authority in your home and require obedience from your children to not provoke them to wrath. Job 1:5, and it was so, when the days of their feasting were gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them, and rose up early in the morning and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, it may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus did Job continually. Nurturing behavior is sanctify. Sanctify, make holy, set apart, or appoint to a holy use, to prepare for divine service. Sanctify your children to not provoke them to wrath. I also have some references for what the fruit is of children who are being brought up in the nurture of the Lord. And in Isaiah 54:13, your children will have peace. Genesis 18:19, They will keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment. And in Hebrews 12, verses 9 and 11, they will reverence you and your children will be righteous. And I wanted to draw attention to Proverbs 17, verse 6, which says, "The glory of children are their fathers."
There is no one for whom I have more joy seeing what God's done with their life than that young lady. Okay? That point about in the nurture, not with the nurture. Pretty powerful. Okay? Pretty powerful. All right. Come on there, Mr. Shane.
All right, so I, for a while, stumbled with Luke 4. And the biggest thing is I used to struggle with, why would Jesus entertain Satan and being tempted? And I wish I could say I spent a lot of time studying, but God was already answering everything in my head last Sunday. So I already had what I have then. And so anyways, to get to my point, God put Hebrews 4:15 in my head. And that goes, "For we have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin." And Jesus was tempted by the three lusts, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. And God showed me that it's not about Satan. It's about us, in the sense we could be tempted but not sin. So that's pretty much it. But yeah, that's it.
All right, I like it. Very good. Did anybody else do a study? Is there anybody else who feels you did?
Yeah, but we need more time.
If you want me, then I
can. You need more time? That's fine. We'll do it next week. That'll be fine. All right, Jewel, come on. Come on.
Light it up.
Now, I don't have the answers to this study quite yet. I've been studying fear. And I read this verse in Deuteronomy. Just a minute, let me try to find it. All right, here it is. Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 66. "And thy life shall hang in doubt before thee, and thou shalt fear the day and the night, and thou shalt leave, and thou shalt have none assurance of thy life." So when I first read that, I was like, so if you don't have assurance of your life, are you going to be more scared of things? And I was confused. And I was like, well, there must be two types of fears because, you know, it tells you to fear God. And I was like, so is there a righteous fear and then, like, sort of like a scared, unrighteous fear? And I was sort of confused on that. So I was like, maybe, you know, the closer you are to God, the less you'll fear. But then Mr. John threw a monkey wrench in that Thursday night when we were doing Bible study, because it said in Hebrews, I think it was chapter 5, verse 7, and it said he was heard through his fear. It was talking about Jesus when he was praying to God, and it said he was heard through his fear. And I'm like, so he was, you know, fearful. I was like, was he fearful because of the wrath of God that was going to be poured out on him? Because he should be scared of God's wrath because, you know, fear the Lord. But is he also feared of death? And if he was scared of death, then is that not wrong or is it right? So I'm just still studying and thinking about fear. But, yeah, just all in right. The middle of the study, and that's what I've got.
If you have more next week, we'll be ready for it, okay? No one will pressure you. I'm going to just breathe down your neck every moment. By the way, there is Bible study on Thursday. A number of people have asked about that. Is there Bible study Thursday? John Mark's going to, what him and Samantha have, they're going to give us next week. Anybody else have anything they want to go over today? All right. Is it going to offend anybody if we have Pastor Hayne come up and sing right now? All right. Come on. By the way, good job. You know, it's its own reward, isn't it? Doing that kind of stuff. It's just its own reward.